I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to pay our respects to those who served this country during World War II. We're going to talk about Indy Honor Flight, a program that flies veterans to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. We'll talk about what this means to those veterans and to those who are their family members, friends, and admirers. My guests are Grant Thompson of Indy Honor Flight and World War II veterans Al Barker and Kermit Davis. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indy Honor Flight, a program that honors World War II veterans. It's actually part of a national program, but we're talking about the Indiana hub of it. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. And if you are a World War II era veteran, if you are a family member or a friend of a World War II era veteran, and you have a story to tell or a question to ask, I would encourage you to call. This is your show. My guests today are Grant Thompson, who is with Indy Honor Flight. Grant, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here. Al Barker, who is a World War II veteran. Al, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you here as well. And Kermit Davis, who is also a World War II veteran. Kermit, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. Well, Grant, I'm going to start with you. Let's talk a little bit about what Indy Honor Flight is, how it got started. Give me an overview.
Certainly. Be happy to do that. In 2004, 60 years after the close of World War II, the memorial was finally dedicated and opened in our nation's capital there. And in doing so, there was a doctor in Ohio named Earl Morse, worked at a VA hospital, asked one of his patients one day, he said, do you think you'd ever like to go and see that? Do you think you'd have a chance to go and check out your memorial? And this patient of his said, well, I'd like to, but I don't know that I've got the money, and I'm a little slow these days. I'm not sure about airports and so forth. And the good doctor there reminded him not only was he a doctor, but that he also owned a small airplane. Needless to say, Earl took this veteran out there, and that was the first honor flight. Fast forward about a year, he'd wrapped up a lot of his friends involved in this and so forth. And last time they flew out on small aircraft, there was about 20 airplanes that flew out together, and they realized we're onto something here. Because it had only been about a week from that first trip, there was a knock at the door. There's a couple more veterans there said, hey, we hear you're taking us to D.C. So the honor flight was founded. They got a little bit bigger. Now they charter commercial aircraft, 737, sometimes 747s, fly these guys out hundreds at a time. There's currently over 100 hubs across the country that have collectively, since 2004, collectively flown about 100,000 World War II veterans out to see their memorial completely free of charge. And that's just amazing. It seems the right thing to do, get these guys out there. We waited so long that most of these men and women would not have the chance to go out and visit their memorial if the honor flight didn't exist. They need help financially. They need help physically. A lot of the guys might be in wheelchairs. Just getting around. You know, the average age today is 89 years old. And a lot of times they just need a hand getting around. So each one of them is paired up with what we call a guardian. And that person is there as a personal assistant. They'll watch the clock, make sure they get back on the bus on time, take pictures, be a tour guide, be a friend, a shoulder to cry on sometimes. Whatever it takes, whatever that veteran needs, that's what that guardian is there for. And we're getting ready to take our third trip this Saturday out to our nation's capital. They're going to bring another 70 veterans out there, and we can't be more excited and look forward to it.
How long is the trip? I mean, if you take them out, is it just you fly out in the morning and come back in an evening, or is there an overnight stay, or What is involved in an experience like this?
Well, for us, it is exactly as you described. We leave early in the morning, and we'll fly back that same day. Now, there's hubs on the far west coast. There's actually two hubs that recently opened in Alaska, if you can believe that.
So yeah, they're not going to be able to do it.
Obviously, yeah.
And out and back
a little more.
On that one. Yeah.
That's a three, maybe a four-day trip there, because one day is all travel. But we're very fortunate that it's a 90-minute flight away. So we can get there fairly quickly, hit the ground, go see the different memorials. While we're there, we'll do the World War II Memorial. We pay a visit to the Lincoln, as well as the Korean and Vietnam memorials. And then we end the day at Arlington National Cemetery, where we'll lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And then we fly home.
And is there a cost to the veteran for participating, or is that something?
No. The veterans have paid enough.
Okay.
By all means, they have paid enough. One of the sad things in this whole story is that World War II Memorial was primarily funded by the World War II veterans themselves. And that's very frustrating to me and a lot of other people. So they've paid enough. They've served their time, fought for our freedom, defended tyranny, or defended our country, the world, saved the world. So we raise the money to get them out there. Now, the Guardians, I mentioned that each one of the veterans is paired with the Guardian. Mm-hmm. The Guardians do make a donation that offsets their cost of travel. And we have, surprisingly, no shortage of Guardians, people willing to step up, spend hard-earned money to spend one day with these incredible people.
And how you say you do fundraising. Where does the funding come from, by and large?
Well, we're not picky when it comes to taking dollars. I tell you, we're a 501c, true nonprofit corporation, and we do fundraising.
So the contributions, to explain to people out there who might not know IRS terminology, as those of us in the not-for-profit world, that means a contribution to your organization is tax-deductible.
Truly tax-deductible, 100%. Every penny that you would donate to the Honor Flight organization, be it Indianapolis or other, is truly nonprofit, which means you can claim it on your taxes.
Okay. And if people are so moved to make a contribution, how do they go about doing that?
There's a couple ways. You can call our line at 317-559-1600.
Go ahead and give that again in case they didn't have a pencil ready the first time.
That's 317-559-1600.
Okay.
You can also visit, of course, our website. We've all got websites these days, and that is www.indyhonorflight.org.
Go ahead and do that one more time
that
as well.
www.indyhonorflight.org.
We are talking about Indy Honor Flight, a program to honor World War II veterans by taking them to Washington, D.C. to see the World War II Memorial. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Again, if you've got a story to share about either your experience in World War II or a parent's experience in World War II, aunt or an uncle, this is your show. Al, could you tell me a little bit? You've taken the Honor Flight, right?
Yes, I have.
When did you go?
The last one, which went back on April 20th.
April 20th of this year?
This year.
What was it like?
It was an indescribable day. Up at 4 o'clock in the morning, didn't get to bed till midnight, didn't know I was tired till I got there. A full day of really wonderful people. The Honor Flight crews, the fellows who work on it, the fellow veterans. It was astounding, really, how much communication there was, which is not normal among veterans.
You guys, I know my father's a World War II. You guys tend to be a little bit on the taciturn side. I'll grant you that. Kermit, you've taken a trip to Indy Honor Flight as well?
Yes.
Which one was that? Which one did you go on?
I believe it was the inaugural flight.
Okay, and when was that?
What was the date of that?
September the 10th.
Of 2012?
Yes.
Okay, what was that like?
Yeah, it was a good experience. I tell you, one thing I enjoyed more of it is the Korean War Memorial and the Vietnam War Memorial. I'm not knocking the World War II Memorial, but whoever conceived those memorials, they sort of tell the story on that. But I think one of the outstanding things I thought about it was the mail call, where we got letters from people who had wrote to us that I guess Mr. Thompson had arranged. And then, of course, the welcome home, which was a complete surprise. I didn't expect a welcome like that.
What did it mean to you, Kermit? I mean, we're going to talk about your service here in a little bit, but I want to sort of focus on the Indiana flight right now before we talk about, you know, World War II and your experiences there. What did it mean to you to have those people waiting for you at the airport?
Well, you know, that they remembered. I've never really thought about it that much. I just appreciated. I know members of my family were there. I know when we came home from World War II, we didn't get a reception like that, which was okay. Those were different times than this, but it was a great experience.
We are talking about Indy Honor Flight here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Kermit, I'm going to stay with you for just a minute. Could you tell me a little bit, where did you serve in World War II?
Well, overseas, I went as a replacement in the 3rd Division on Guam, and then at Guam, we proceeded. I went to Iwo Jima, mm-hmm. and then after the war was over, I served on an island called Chichijima, which is a story itself mm-hmm. on that. And I'm not here to tell you any war stories, but I do tell sometimes my first kill on Guam. Of course, we were out of, you know, we were mm-hmm. sort of out of boot camp, and we were maybe a little trigger happy, and I know we were out in the jungle, and we heard this noise and everything, and boy, we opened up and fired and heard this grunt and everything. Boy, that's our first one. What we'd killed was a water buffalo on that. And
how old were you when you went into the service?
18.
18?
I went out right after I graduated.
Okay, and when was this?
That was in 1944. I graduated in 44.
Okay.
And I went into the Marine Corps. I actually wanted to be in the Navy, but I went down to Cincinnati to be inducted, and I was in the Navy line, and they come over and took me out of the Navy line, put me in the Marine line, and I got out of the Marine line, went back, and they took me back again, put me in the Marine line, and the guy stood with me, and I couldn't get out of it, so that's how I ended up in the Marines on that. But, you know, they called it the Marines is a part of the Navy, mm-hmm. the men's department.
Well, you just about guaranteed we're going to hear from the Navy veterans now. We're not going to start another war here today, okay, Kermit? We'll try to avoid that if we can. Al, when were you in the service, and were you?
Went in at 17, trained, as a matter of fact, some of my early training was at Camp Atterbury, Indiana, where I joined the 106th Division. We went overseas and landed in Scotland, spent a little time in England, then crossed to France and into the Battle of the Bulge, which we didn't know was called that, but Winston Churchill named it that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And what years did you say you went in 40?
I went in 43.
In 43, and how old were you? You were 17?
17.
And then were you there for the duration then?
Well, yes. I came home to a 72-day furlough after the close of the war in Europe.
And you were in the European theater the whole time. Kermit, yeah. You were in the Pacific theater the whole time?
Yes.
We're going to talk some more, obviously, about those experiences. I guess I should ask you, Al, real quickly. When you took the honor flight and you came back, what did it mean to you?
One very special thing.
What's that?
World War II Memorial, Atlantic side. There's a sculpture of Ike Eisenhower, and behind him are his words as he declared D-Day. As he ordered D-Day. And I can't get it out of my mind what a responsibility that man held at that time when he knew that he was ordering hundreds of young men to be killed the next day.
Yeah, that is, when you think about it, it is a sobering realization. We are talking today on No Limits about Indy Honor Flight, a program that honors World War II veterans by flying them to Washington, D.C. to see the World War II Memorial. My guests are Grant Thompson of Indy Honor Flight and Al Barker and Kermit Davis, who are both World War II veterans. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indy Honor Flight, a program that honors World War II veterans by flying them to Washington, D.C. so that they can see the World War II Memorial there. My guests are Grant Thompson, who is with Indy Honor Flight, Al Barker, and Kermit Davis, who are both World War II veterans. Just before we went to the break, Al, you were talking about the realization, really, of the responsibility that Dwight Eisenhower had with all of that. When you go to the memorial, we've seen other veterans that there's some sort of catharsis or they make peace with the experience. What things flooded through your mind as you were standing there? I mean, did you remember your days in service? Do you remember your comrades? What were you thinking about?
Well, yes, I thought about old times, but I also thought about family. I had three brothers. Two of them were in World War II. One of them was in Korea. Mm-hmm. And none of them would talk anything about their experiences. And I had an event in my life which made me free to be able to speak of it.
What was that, if I might ask?
Well,
if it's too intrusive, you can tell me the question is.
Not at all, not at all, because I'm free to speak of it. It was 28 years. I kept my voice absolutely silent. But in 1973, my wife and I were in Europe on business in Luxembourg, and we were ready to go home, and I turned to her and I said, "Honey, how would you like to drive into Germany?" I don't know where that came from, but she said yes, and we went, and for 5 days we visited in Germany. I had learned enough German to converse, and when that 5 days was over, my cares were gone, mm-hmm. and my bitterness was gone, and so I'm free to talk.
What was the source? I know the background, but I want you to talk about it because it's your story. What was the source of that bitterness? I mean, you had a reason to be angry.
Well, there were some specific things which you don't go into detail, but I was in two camps. One was in the Polish border, and one was just about 35 miles out of Berlin.
You were a prisoner of war.
Yes, I was a prisoner. Got shot up in the Battle of the Bulge. And the walk between the two camps, there were some things that occurred there, including a couple of deaths that shouldn't have happened. That really, really stuck with me for 28 years.
And this happened. I mean, you said you went into the service when you were 17 years old. I'm assuming you volunteered, right?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
So you volunteered at 17. So you came out by the time the war ended. You're still just a kid, right? You're only 19?
I was 20.
20?
No, I'm sorry. I was 2 days from being 20 years old.
Okay, so yeah. I apologize if I've insulted any teenagers out there, but some of us are still kids. But you were still very, very young, and to have to process something like that, what did that anger do to you in the interim? I mean, for that 28 years that you were carrying it around.
Well, if there was any conversation that was started about experience in the war, it bothered me. I would break out in a sweat. I became very quiet, and sometimes it was a tough thing sometimes to just to be there and not to say anything.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask both of you, both Al and Kermit. You know, Tom Brokaw has labeled that World War II generation the greatest generation. Before that, there, you know, some reference to World War II as the good war. I know there are some veterans who have embraced that. There are some veterans who actually are borderline offended by those characterizations. A, they say there's no such thing as a good war, and B, we really didn't think of ourselves as the greatest generation. We were just guys who went out there to do their duty. How do you feel about that? Kermit, I'll start with you. Give Al a second.
You have to remember back to the time of the world, at the war, the psychology of the American people, you know, we were, I don't say we weren't glad to go, but, we felt it was our duty to participate in the war because all the American people were behind it. It wasn't like, wars that followed on that. And, we were just expected to go and do our job.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, though, at some level that might have kept you guys from getting your due at one point or another, in the sense that, because World War II was one we could kind of agree upon. We could agree, A, we were attacked, so we didn't have a whole lot of choice in the matter. B, the kind of horrors that Al was describing in the European theater in particular, and similar horrors in the Pacific theater, made people see why we had to fight that thing. I guess where I'm going with this is that we kind of in memory turned it into a feel-good experience, and from particularly what I'm hearing from Al, it wasn't a feel-good experience. It was a traumatizing experience. You did it because you had to, but it wasn't something you necessarily celebrated. Al, am I characterizing your feelings accurately? Or
I'd sum it up very clearly with the remarks of a Civil War general who said, "War is hell."
Yes, William Tecumseh Sherman.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. We are talking about Indy Honor Flight here on No Limits. That's a program that honors World War II veterans by flying them to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
Certainly. Thank you for calling in. What's on your mind?
First of all, I just would like to say thank you so much to these gentlemen for your service. Means a lot to me. And I'm actually a combat veteran from the Iraq War, and I just really would like to find out more about being one of the assistants for one of these flights.
Grant, I think that's your cue. Stay with us, Mike. I'm going to keep you on the line while Grant answers your question.
Sure, Mike. Thanks for asking that question. The easiest way to learn more about that is to visit our website, which was www.indyhonorflight.org. And on there, you'll find a tab at the top that says Applications. And you can download the Guardian application. I can tell you that there's a bit of a waiting list. You complete that application, you get it back into us. You can mail it, fax it, email it, send that in to us, and then you'll be on the waiting list. And as I mentioned earlier, we have no shortage. Unfortunately for you, we've got no shortage of guardians, but we do certainly look at all of the applications that come in, and we weigh a little bit on the veterans, the potential guardians who are veterans, as well as paramedics and those that are medically trained. So do fill out that application sooner rather than later, because we're always getting more coming in. And you just wait patiently, and it's a day that you'll never forget. It's absolutely incredible. I also mentioned that we do ask that the Guardians make a donation that will offset your travel for the day, and that's $450. Just don't want any surprises there, but that covers everything. That's the airplane trip, the buses, the meals, and a very nice souvenir T-shirt you get to go home with.
Thanks very much for the call, Mike, and for the question. Question, Grant, why is there a waiting list? I mean, presumably, with all due respect to Kermit and Al, these guys aren't getting any younger. I would think we'd want to do as many flights as we could.
True. That's very true. The waiting list, there's twofold. We need two things to make a trip. We need enough veterans, and we need enough donations coming in to support the trip. The trip, you can do the math. We have about 150 people. It costs about $450 per person, all expenses paid, the meals, et cetera. So we need to raise over $60,000 to make one of these trips. So we're constantly fundraising. When we have enough money, we make a trip. Mm-hmm. But the other catch is just getting the veterans to be aware that this program even exists. There's a lot of them that are still just finding out about it. As has been shared already, a lot of them don't talk about this, the war in general. They did their time. They got back. They put their memories in a box down in the basement and tried hard to forget about it.
Who qualifies for one of these flights? What veterans qualify? For example, my father actually went in right after VJ Day. I mean, his 18th birthday was after that. He's classified, I think, as a World War II era veteran, but did not serve, actually, in either of the theaters.
Sure.
In fact, he got sent to the Aleutians, but that's a whole other story.
That's a very good question. You talk to these guys, and almost every one of them will tell you, well, I'm no hero. I didn't do anything. I don't deserve to go on a flight like this. And we're quick to point out, if there were no heroes, how did we win the war? Mm-hmm. How were we able to, accomplish what we did if none of you actually did much? So I remind them that for every man that was on the front line, for every POW like Al, or for every man like Kermit who's on Iwo Jima, there were dozens behind them that got them to that point. So as far as who qualifies, you send in that application. The veterans will send in that application. We look at that list based on two criteria: how long they've been on the waiting list and their age. Mm-hmm. So we'll take the oldest guys, and we're going through the World War II generation still. And if we have, the youngest World War II veteran typically is 85 years old today. Mm-hmm. So if you're under 85, you're going to wait a little bit longer. If you're 95, probably go on the next flight. Mm-hmm. For obvious reasons. As you said, they're not getting any younger. We're losing these guys at an alarming rate. We're doing all that we can. We're constantly, coming out, speaking, doing fundraising, spreading the word. And I ask, everyone that hears about this to share this program, to let people know. One of the things we need to do is recruit. We need to find these veterans, because so many of them just simply don't know about it. Mm-hmm. And if we have those applications coming in, we'll never let that waiting list get too long. We're always striving to get these guys out as soon as possible, because time is not on our side.
And you'd mentioned before we went on the air that one of the things you want to try to do is get people out for the homecoming when they come back from the Indiana flight on Saturday evening. Let's assume there are people out there who want to say thank you to these guys. They don't necessarily have $450 that they can afford to throw at this, but taking a trip out to the airport to welcome them back and to say thanks, how would they go about doing that? Where should they be Saturday night?
There's so many ways to get involved and have a big impact on this program and the lives of the veterans that we serve. One of them, as you said, is that homecoming this Saturday night, September 7th. If you're out at the Indianapolis airport, we ask people be there about 8 p.m. because at 8:30, we'll be coming through the airport with 70 World War II veterans. And, $450 is a lot of money in this day.
Mm-hmm.
But $4 to park for an hour, it's cheaper than a movie. And what you're going to see inside the airport that night is just incredible. And these men can speak. I don't need to put words in their mouth to tell you how special that is. When we come around the corner, the bagpipes are playing. There's flags waving. There's a couple thousand grateful Americans.
So it's just in the terminal itself.
In the terminal.
Waiting in the food court,
you won't
over
miss
there,
us.
You can have a cup of coffee and wait and realize that about 8:30 they'll be coming
through. If there's room, we hope to fill that food court on Saturday night.
We are talking about Indy Honor Flight here on No Limits. It is a program designed to honor World War II veterans by taking them to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I have no question other than I work for the Department of Veterans Affairs here in Indianapolis, Indiana, and one of the vets that I serve will be attending this Saturday's honor flight. He's a gentleman who I'm not at liberty to mention his name or anything, but he's very proud of his service, and I'm very proud and honored that I'm able to serve him through the Department of Veterans Affairs. I think what this program is an excellent way for our country to show appreciation to our nation's veterans, and I look to do whatever I can to help it out.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Tom. Really appreciate it. Well, are you going to, Kermit, now? I mean, is this something where you guys stay connected after this? I mean, will you be out there Saturday night, either one of you, or is it has this helped you sort of reconnect with veterans in other ways, maybe by phone calls, letters, that sort of thing?
I'll be out there because I want them to experience what I experienced.
You're going to be out there?
Yep.
And Al, how about you?
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to be out there Saturday evening. I've got a conflict with that, but I'd just like to recognize Grant and his cohorts who have put this thing together. It is absolutely one of the best managed events I've ever seen, and we owe them a great deal of thanks for recognizing all the rest of us, our World War II veterans. They're doing just a fantastic job, and more power to them. I'm sticking with them. I'll help them fundraise. I'll help them in any way that I can.
Grant, real quickly, this is part of a national program, and actually this show gets heard in other places thanks to the miracle now of modern communications. If people who are living outside of Indiana want to figure out if there's a hub in their area, how should they go about doing that? Who coordinates it in D.C.?
Great question. There is a national website, which is simply www.honorflight.org, which is honorflight.org. It has a map for regional hubs, so you can click on that. It'll pull up the map. You click on your home state. You find out if there's any hubs in your area, and you pick the closest one. Some states have multiple hubs. We are one of three here in Indiana. Mm-hmm. We've got friends up in Lafayette and Fort Wayne who are doing the same thing that we are down here in Indianapolis. But again, there's over 100 hubs across the country, and if you, by chance, visit that website, honorflight.org, and you find that there's not a hub in your local area, I encourage you to start one. Make the phone call and start one.
How do you go about starting one? What all is involved in doing
that?
Well,
I will put a caveat on that with an ominous warning that you can kiss your hobbies goodbye. Yeah. Your free time, your hobbies. This is something that you're all in. I know my wife and I, as well as many of the board members and volunteers that serve this program here in Indianapolis, you've got to be all in. And it's easy to do because we're so passionate about trying to honor these men and women and say thank you for what you did. But there's some steps involved. The National Network has a little manual that will kind of walk you through. A lot of this was new to us when we first started, how to be a nonprofit, you know, filing taxes, as we mentioned before, to be a 501c corporation.
501c3.
Yep, C3, and to have a board of directors, and you know, there's a lot of paperwork and so forth that goes along with that. So there's a process, and they can help you and guide you through there, and it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever been a part of by far.
How many hours a week do you have to throw at this, Grant?
Well, realistically, it varies. It picks up around the flight time. If I look a little tired right now, it's because last night we were busy packing, setting out shirts and name badges and so forth. So it varies. I would say on average, you know, being the chairman of the organization here, I'll probably spend anywhere from 20 to 30 hours a week on it.
We are talking about Indy Honor Flight, a program designed to honor World War II veterans here on No Limits. My guests are Grant Thompson with Indy Honor Flight, Al Barker, and Kermit Davis, who are World War II veterans. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall. We are talking today about Indy Honor Flight. It is a program that honors World War II veterans by taking them on flights to Washington, D.C., where they see the World War II Memorial. We have one going this Saturday. My guests are Grant Thompson, who is with Indy Honor Flight, Al Barker, and Kermit Davis, both of whom are World War II veterans. And we've gotten a tweet from a listener named Leanne who says, what a cool way I might be able to honor my grandfather's memory. He passed in 2003 and served in the Army in World War II. Grant, do you get a lot of that? Do you get people who make contributions, even if their World War II veteran isn't there? It's a way of paying tribute or honoring that person's service in that fashion.
Most certainly. That's something that hits home with me, and I can speak about. I made the first phone call to be a guardian. I found out about the Honor Flight program myself and called up Ohio's, where the headquarters are mm-hmm. for the Honor Flight Network, called up to simply be a guardian, to be someone who could spend a day with one of these veterans, because my grandfather, who, like Kermit, served on Iwo Jima, among other places, had also passed years before that memorial was ever finished. And it was his honor that we started this hub here. My wife and I, we started the hub in Indianapolis. I couldn't take my grandfather, so I did the next best thing. I took Kermit, mm-hmm. and then I took Al. Mm-hmm. And we take them 70 at a time, and it's an amazing thing. So a lot of the guardians are, we do have some family members. There might be medical conditions and so forth. Well, we'll invite a family member to come along with the veteran. But most of the guardians by far are people like you and I whose parents or grandparents were unable, or maybe they're still with us, but they're just physically unable to make that trip. So they go in honor of that person. Mm-hmm. And we have amazing people. The emotions that come out when you witness that homecoming, and these guys come back to Indianapolis after a day in D.C., visiting mm-hmm. the memorial and so forth, you see a lot of tears. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. There's probably more guardians in tears than veterans themselves, because there's personal reasons that they go. Now, these are people that will spend good money to spend a day essentially with a stranger. Mm-hmm. Now, we train them, and they get to know one another. They're considered friends, and we encourage that they remain friends for years to come. But basically, this is someone that they didn't know, and they're going to go spend the day with. So there's a reason behind that, just like your listener there. Every one of us has a reason to get involved. So it's something personal. Let's face it, back during World War II, there was hardly a family that was not affected. You know, mm-hmm. if you were able-bodied between 18 and 20 years old, chances are Uncle Sam had his eyes on you, and you were going to serve. So there's hardly a family today out there that doesn't have an uncle, a great uncle, a father,
somebody. Connection to this, yes. In some way, some very yes. personal connection. I should ask, what you said, you throw 20 to 20 when you're not working at this. What is your life? What's your career?
That's boring.
I know, but we probably ought to establish that this is a labor of love for you, and it's not a career choice.
It is. My wife and I are, self-employed. We operate a .com, basically. It's a warehouse, and we ship cables and products out across the country. We've got over a dozen employees, and business is going well enough that we're able to do what we're actually passionate about. Work is work, and it's a wonderful thing. We work with some great people. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of them probably listening right now, and I can't thank them enough for their hard work, because it enables us, my wife and I, to go out and spend time on this. You know, our business has doubled as Honor Flight for Indianapolis headquarters. Mm-hmm. We did the mail sorting last night. As I mentioned, the mail will come in, all the products come in. We've got a warehouse there. The drinks, you know, when we fly, we've got 50 wheelchairs plus that we bring, all these drinks, snacks, foods, shirts, all the stuff has to come in, and our business can handle that and kind of operates, you know, in double as Honor Flight headquarters around flight time, the couple of weeks leading up to it. So we're very fortunate in that regard that it affords us to do what we're actually passionate about.
What sort of response do you get from, obviously, we got a call from the Veterans Administration here, from government officials? I mean, I'm presuming if you bring groups of veterans out there, that there'd be people occasionally who want to greet them when they get to Washington, D.C. Is that the case?
It really is. One in particular, not as much as he used to, but Bob Dole mm-hmm. was instrumental in getting that World War II memorial built, and he would come out day after day. When we're there on Saturday, this coming Saturday, when we're in D.C., we're going to be one of seven different groups in Washington to tour the World War II Memorial. So it's going to be a busy day, but there's senators and congressmen. You get governors and mayors want to get involved. They'll come out and support us. Sometimes people will write letters to the veterans, thanking them for their service. We do a lot of other little functions outside of the flight. And it's not uncommon to see some of the folks that hold office show up and you know, express their gratitude because, again, they too have family members and they want to say thank you. You know, it's rare in this day and time that we have a chance to say thank you for the freedoms that we have today. And it's hard to argue that these men on either side of me here and the other 16 million Americans that fought alongside them, it's hard to argue that they didn't have a huge impact on our freedoms that we still have to this date. So it's a great opportunity to come out and say thank you.
We are talking about Indy Honor Flight, a program that honors World War II veterans by taking them to Washington, D.C. so they can see the World War II Memorial. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Kermit, Grant has mentioned a couple of times, and I've noticed that you did not necessarily mention it, that you were at Iwo Jima. Could you talk a little bit about that experience, what it was like?
Yes. I guess, you know, I was an American history teacher and I'm an avid reader and I enjoy some of the stories and I read about Iwo Jima. There's one story in particular I like. It's, you know, there was a night attack that really broke open to where we went to the sea and sort of ended up the campaign. And I know on this, the book describes it as a surprise night attack, Marines stealthily sneaking through enemy lines. Well, the way it really happened, they came around to us and said, we're moving out. And I said, we asked, where are we going? And I said, I don't know, just follow the guy ahead of you. We all thought we were going to the rear for a rest. And then we followed the guy ahead of us and we actually passed through enemy lines, and then when daylight came, we were surrounded, and it took another battalion a couple of days to rescue us. But I sort of get a kick out reading some of those stories, that how they appear in the books, but that wasn't the way it really happened.
Has anybody ever gotten it right in one of these books or stories? Because when I talk to veterans, they say that some of that's just the limitations of trying to write a narrative of some kind, to do a movie or whatever. It imposes a kind of order on an experience that was far more chaotic and terrifying than can work with something like that. Has anybody gotten it right? You say you were a history teacher, Kermit. Has anybody captured that?
Oh, I think they try, and I can see while they would be sometimes a little misconception, but nevertheless, that's the way it is.
Al, has anybody gotten it right from your perspective in terms of describing what war was really like? Do you think?
I'm not sure that's possible, but
in what way, you know, if I were asking you to tell me, just describe what your experience in war was like, what words would you choose to describe it? And again, if the question's too intrusive, I'll back
no,
up.
It's not intrusive. It's a hard one to answer. It was worthwhile. We had to do what we had to do. I don't regret any of it. In fact, I think it taught me a lot about my young life at that time, that I've always, my whole life has been served by some of those lessons I've learned, especially in discipline.
And you mean in personal discipline?
Personal discipline, yes.
I'll ask both of you guys, how did the war change you? How did your service change you? Kermit, I'll start with you.
Oh, I don't know. I think the government did well by me after I got out. I got a college education. I was able to go on, teach. I always wanted to be a football coach all my life, and I was able to do that. Mm-hmm. And if I wouldn't have got that college education from them, I would have never realized that. And I know at the Veterans Administration at Indianapolis, which is outstanding, mm-hmm. They have taken good care of me. They have given me some very expensive hearing aids mm-hmm. on that. And I got my toenails cut there last week.
That's good to know.
And I say they've been good to me.
Al, how did the war change you?
I grew up a lot, and I grew up fast. And lessons that I learned there have lasted me for the last 65 years.
We are talking about Indy Honor Flight here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Rachel, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly.
First of all, I want to say a big thank you to the guests that you have today who served in World War II. Thank you so much for your service. And also, this program is just tremendous. My question is that I have a neighbor who's in his 90s, and he served during World War II on the Pacific Front, and I would love to give him information about this program. However, I don't think that he has access to the Internet, so I was just wondering if you guys had any suggestions for the best way to get him information, and I'll go ahead and take my answer off the air.
Great. Thank you very much for the call. Rachel Grant, that's your cue.
Rachel, that's a wonderful question, and thank you for asking. I mentioned earlier that we're looking for help with the recruiting department, and you're now officially a recruiter for the Honor Flight program. What we need you to do, as you said, a lot of these guys don't have Internet access. When we tell them, go to the website, www.this, and download a PDF that, print it and fax it, they get a little lost. So what we're going to ask you to do is visit our website, which is indyhonorflight.org. You can find the Guardian application as well as the Veteran application, and you print that Veteran application off, go next door, go find your neighbor here, explain a little bit about the program, what you're hearing today. You can visit our website, you check out some of the facts, and you know, get some of the questions that he may have. Take that application over to him, and if you would, help him fill it out and explain to him as you do that this is not a definite thing. We just want to get you on the list. I tell people, I said, it's like waiting for a ride, because a lot of them have questions and hesitations about this. It's a very big day. But if you help it fill out, one, it might be a little easier to read. At 90 years old, sometimes the handwriting could be a little shaky, and you'll make sure that everything is filled out completely. You get the full legal name and so forth. You complete that application, have him sign it, and then you send it back into us. You can drop it in the mail. You can fax it, scan it, email it, whatever you'd like to do. Get that to us. That's simply a place in line. We'll call him within about a month after we receive it, let him know that we have that application on file, and then within 2 to 3 months prior to a trip, we'll call, check in with him, probably pay him a visit ourselves in person, kind of assess the health, see if anything has changed and so forth, and let him know where he stands, and you know, when the time comes, invite him to fly with us. So people like yourself that can reach out and help locate the veterans, explain the program, and then get their application turned in on their behalf, we can't thank you enough, because these guys are, there's lots of them out there, but they're hard to track down sometimes. And again, they're not always that savvy with technology. Some of them are. Some of them are better with iPhones and tablets than I am, but that's not always the case. So if you don't mind, anytime you see one of these guys, tell them about it. Tell them about the Honor Flight program. Mention it and see if there's an interest, and then help them with the paperwork, if you would. And we greatly appreciate that.
We've gotten a couple of email questions from listeners. One, and I think these are going to go your way, Grant. One from a listener named Bill who says, I'm lucky enough to be in D.C. on Saturday. What time will the group be at the memorial? I would love to be there.
Bill, that's a good question. And I'll tell you, too, if you by chance miss us, typically the first stop of the day is the World War II Memorial. We will be there at approximately 10:30 a.m. this Saturday. We'll be pulling in. There'll be three buses. It's going to be a busy day. As I mentioned, we're one of seven groups. Most of them are going to be there that same time, earlier in the day. They're probably prior to lunch. So if you show up, there'll be several veterans there, several different honor flight groups. But at 10:30 a.m., we'll be there. We're going to have shirts, tan shirts for the veterans, blue shirts for the Guardians.
And will they say Indianapolis? Are the shirts different based on the region you come from?
We try to have different shirts, but it's hard to coordinate because there's so many different groups. We might not be the only blue and tan shirts, but we do try to kind of color coordinate so we can keep track of our own folks, make sure they get back on the right bus because there's so many buses. It's such a busy place. But, Bill, if you find us, I'll be the guy in the red shirt with a red hat. Stop by. I'd love to meet you and say hi. And, you know, I'll express the gratitude. There's so many people in D.C. that come out time and time again to greet these guys. We'll pull up to the airport, and there's a welcoming committee there in the airport. We pick up tour guides and what we call floaters, some guardians in D.C. that will just jump on the bus and help out however they possibly can. It's amazing because the folks there, like yourself, come out time and time again just to support us. What we do is a one-day thing. There's a lot of work that goes into it, of course, but it's a one-day experience. You guys on the other side, when we land in D.C., you do it over and over, and we can't thank you enough for your support. So come on out. It's incredible to stand next to one of these veterans as they reflect at their memorial. You'll never forget it.
And then we've gotten an email from a listener named Trina, who it sounds like is going to be part of this trip. It says, I attended the last Welcome Home celebration in April and in turn signed up to be a volunteer at this honor flight. There is nothing as moving and emotional as attending the Welcome Home. Bring your kids, grandkids, friends, neighbors, and lots of tissues. Flags, banners, balloons are welcome. Why don't you tell them again real quickly, Grant, where they should be Saturday night if they want people want to come out and welcome these guys back home.
Certainly. And Trina, we appreciate that email because you know firsthand how special this is. And again, if you come out to the Indianapolis airport, the upper level there inside the food court, basically, we'll have most all the food court filled with just grateful Americans, friends, family, neighbors, strangers that just want to come out and say thank you. If you're there at the airport this Saturday by 8:30, if you want to get there by 8 o'clock, that's what we recommend to people because come 8:30, we'll be rounding the corner with 70 more World War II veterans, and we want as many people there as possible. Just like you said, balloons, flags, bring an American flag. When these guys came back from the war, it was months, if not years, after the VJ Day, after the end of the war. They came back to very little, if any, fanfare at all. They never looked for a thank you, a welcome home, a parade, and most of them never got it. But we want to change that. We figure it's been 68 years in the making. We need to welcome them home properly. So thank you.
Grant, I'm afraid that'll have to be the last word. Thank you very much for joining us, Grant Thompson of Indy Honor Flight. Thank you very much for being with us, Grant.
Thank you for having us.
And Kermit Davis and Al Barker, both of whom are World War II veterans, I would like to thank you first for being here with us. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking with you. It's been good to have you here, and even more importantly, I'd like to thank you for your service. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thanks for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.